Welcome to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean.
And you're listening to New England's foremost addiction and mental health program. Massachusetts is facing an alarming heroin and prescription opiate abuse epidemic, part of a larger deadly public health crisis sweeping the northeastern United States. The numbers are shocking. In the year 2000, the Bay State had 363 opiate-related deaths. By 2013, that number had nearly tripled to more than 860. Jump ahead to the present day, and in the first 2 weeks of last month alone, there were over 58 reported overdose deaths.
We have a lot of firsthand experience with this.
We sure do.
And according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the national per capita sales of prescription painkillers quadrupled since 1999, and the number of fatal overdoses due to prescription painkillers also quadrupled. And the statistic that got me the most was enough prescription painkillers were prescribed in 2010 to medicate every American adult continually for a whole month. Everybody. Wow. And prescription opiate drug-related deaths now outnumber those from heroin and cocaine combined.
So this crisis has the attention of our local and state governments. And tonight on Right Turn Radio, we're going to have Massachusetts Attorney General-elect Maura Healey and Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. They're two leading representatives dedicated to helping end this epidemic. And they're joining us. Welcome, Attorney General-elect Healey and Mayor Walsh.
Great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
So let's start with you, Maura. What is the problem as you see it from where you're sitting?
Well, you know, over the last year and a half, I was out on the campaign trail traveling across the state. And it didn't matter what community I was in. Inevitably, somebody would come up to me afterwards and talk about a child, a brother, or sister, or parent who was dealing with heroin addiction or prescription drug abuse. And it really struck a chord. And we've all seen how devastating this has been. The crisis has worsened. And I decided that as Attorney General, my first and top priority out of the gate was to use all the power and the resources of the Attorney General's office to partner with folks like Mayor Walsh and others across the state to combat this issue and to help families and communities.
Mayor Walsh, what are you seeing in Boston right now?
I mean, you've seen it for a while. This is nothing new. I know the numbers are getting more and more every year, and they're going to continue to get more and more every year until we have a full program on how we want to address this issue. You know, the heroin deaths, one of them, those are the ones that are recorded.
Yeah.
Those
right.
aren't the ones that people don't record, which I'd be willing to bet is probably three times that number, which when you think about, that's a staggering number, that potentially almost 3,000 deaths in 2014, if you have it. I know there was a young man that I helped 6 years ago get into treatment. Never met him. His father knew me and reached out to me, and I got him into treatment, and a few weeks ago, they buried him. You know, this is a gentleman who's in and out of recovery trying to fight the heroin addiction, and it started taking the pills. I know that when I was a member of the legislature, we passed the prescription monitoring program, which I don't think it's fully implemented, and I commend the Attorney General-elect, Maura Healey, for the action she took last week, and I'm actually looking forward to her in partnering to work to move forward to make some real change here. I think you need to have that law enforcement arm to help us, particularly with the prescription drugs. I had dinner a few weeks ago with a bunch of people, and one of them was a doctor in medical school, and I asked the person, I said, let me ask you a question. What kind of training do you have around giving prescription drugs? And they talked a little bit about it. I said, what kind of training do you have for addiction and teaching addiction? Well, it's in the class. I said, is it a semester? What is it? And it's mentioned in the class. So I think that the issue here is what we have to do is a bigger issue. We have to go back to education for our young people, explain to them, but we also have to educate the medical society and let them know that when you're a doctor, you prescribe something, you got to be careful what you prescribed. I was no secret, I had kidney stones a few weeks ago, and I was prescribed oxycodone. And even though I'm not a drug addict, I'm an alcoholic, but there's no difference. So you have to be very careful and find out a little bit of history. Now, my doctor was great, but because we talked about the history, but if you don't have that conversation about your history, what's a perfect opportunity for an addict to be sitting in a room legitimately getting pills, or somebody who can get addictive quickly and get them legitimately, and next thing you know, they're putting heroin, a needle in their arm, shooting heroin. And actually, some of the deaths in Boston over the last couple of weeks were heroin. It wasn't needle, it was snorting.
Yeah.
So there was no needle found. So that's something I didn't hear a lot of two or three years ago. I'm hearing it now.
Yeah. We walk a fine line, Maura Healey, dealing with the criminal side, the criminal justice side of addiction and the drug wars and all that, and there's a transition that needs to be made. We were talking about a public health issue. How do you plan on addressing that?
Well, I think once you're talking about criminal law enforcement and folks embroiled in the criminal justice system, it's too late. The mayor is absolutely right. We need to focus on education and outreach, particularly to young people, prevention. But we need to focus on treatment and recovery. And part of that is talking to docs and teaching them and working with them on responsible prescribing practices. I heard even in the last few days from so many folks who said they had a child who was under the care of a doctor who prescribed medication that only exacerbated, compounded the problem. They were trying to help out. A lot of these folks are folks with dual diagnosis, mental health issues,
right,
and addiction issues. And, you really need to be careful there. So the mayor is right on about the need to work with the medical community around training there as well. But also, I guess I come at it as the attorney general, the people's lawyer, consumer advocate role to play. And here's where we get to the role of pharmaceutical companies and what's happening with prescription drugs. And I've said I want to take a hard look there at the sale and marketing practices. I don't want to cut off anybody's access to needed medication for pain and other issues. But, let's face it. You started with the numbers when we started the show, Abby, and the use has skyrocketed, and the prescribing has skyrocketed. So we need, everybody at the table, everybody responsible. It's why, I've called for some things, working in concert with the state police and the Department of Public Health around building a more robust prescription drug monitoring program so we have a better sense of who's prescribing, who's dispensing, who's doctor shopping, and in that way we can bring to bear some more focused resources. But it's an issue that I think, to effectively solve, you got to come at it from all angles, because you have some people, young people I've heard from who were, the victim of a sports injury get prescribed pills. You've got people with mental health issues. You got people coming to this from all angles. I met a guy who lost his home in foreclosure, fell off a ladder at work, and got on Oxy and
that was
spiraled
it.
From there.
Well, one of the things that we talked about when I started in this field 25, 30 years ago was treatment on demand, because we have such a small opportunity of time. Somebody calls and they want help then. And if you say call back every day for 3 weeks, it's not going to work. And I know Mayor Walsh, you had done some addressing of this.
We clearly need more detox beds. There's no question about it. We need more transitional programs, and we need more halfway houses, particularly halfway houses for women as well. We don't have enough for women. Treatment on demand is something that I'd love to see happen, but we still need to deal with the problem. And we're talking about a massive problem that's getting so big. I know there's an issue with getting into treatment, but I think the issue is bigger, more than that. Some of the deaths that we have, some of these young people have, or some of the people that die, have an opportunity to get into detox. They just don't take the opportunity. I think what's encouraging right now at this time, moment in time, is that Maura Healey spoke about this on the campaign trail. This was not something she said the other day before she gets sworn in as Attorney General. She's been talking about it on the campaign trail. She's talking about real stories she heard of on the campaign trail. We have a new governor who's actually talking about it as well, and something that he encountered on the campaign trail. And not only that, but in real life. So, and we have, we have the legislature who, in the last 10 years, really has done a lot. I was part of that body. So we have elected public officials talking about it. Now I think it's about educating them on actually the magnitude of the problem, but then also taking the word out there. And I think treatment on demand is something that we'd love to have, but we still have the issue. And I think the approach that Maura Healey is looking at taking is really is a way. When I say it's not that it's not new, but she's actually and I don't mean to speak for you, but you're going to take this issue and take it on, and that's what we needed. And that's what we need. And that's what we need in the future. And I think when we have a city of Boston and other cities and towns around the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, mayors who talk to me about this all the time, we have an attorney general who's going to take this thing head on. We have a governor willing to talk about it and going to have to make an investment. There's going to have to be an investment here. So as we talk about the budget problems we have at Beacon Hill, we need to make sure that as you cut, this has always been one of the first things cut.
Yeah.
You know, year after year, it's been cut. I mean, in my 17 years in the State House, I think if I wasn't there, in some cases, it would have been cut a lot worse. But it's always the first thing to get cut. And you got to realize every dollar you cut out of it is probably going to mean hundreds of more deaths.
Well, it's also going to be spending a lot more money on other things like hospitals and, police and all that kind of stuff.
Well, the hospitals, too. We need to, I mean, I think with the hospitals is we have to help them with the continuation of care. Because what happens is, and I've seen it in my own hands, where a person will go in there addicted or go in there overdosing, they'll come through, and then they can't keep them.
Yep. Toodaloo.
And they have to let them go. And when you have somebody in a hospital bed, a family member or a loved one or somebody addicted, that's when you get them at the most lowest point. And if they walk out that front door, well, you know who's picking them up? Somebody they were using with an hour earlier or 3 hours earlier. Right. So it really is about making sure. So we have to look at that as well.
We're talking with Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, Massachusetts Attorney General-elect Maura Healey. We're talking about the opiate crisis in Boston and Massachusetts and New England, the United States, really. You're listening to Right Turn Radio. We'll be back right after the break. In the studio with us is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and Massachusetts Attorney General-elect Maura Healey. I just want to read something, Mayor Walsh, from your Facebook page. It's a stat that was pretty shocking to me. This is in the city of Boston. There was a 76% increase in the rate of heroin overdoses between 2010 and 2012, higher than the rate of increase for other substances. That's kind of shocking to me. 76% in 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it out there in the streets when you're walking around. I know that in the Mass Ave area of Boston, people said there's more people out there because Long Island shut down. If they went out there the day before we closed Long Island Bridge, John, you would have seen it. And it's heroin is easy to get. It's cheaper. There's a dangerous, it's dangerous, more dangerous. And a lot of it is pills. I see it. I think I said this last time I was on the radio. I've been to a meeting talking to a young person in recovery, telling them that they just need to learn to stay away from a drink or a drug for a day. They've turned to me, a young man in particular, turned to me and said, "Oh, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just a drug addict," because they never had that opportunity or that experience of drinking as a teenager. They started taking pills and they took them right to heroin. So it's just really scary how quickly I've seen people. And the Attorney General spoke about it about the case she saw somebody get into a car accident. I have a situation like that. A friend of mine, car accident, broke his neck, started taking Oxycontins. Stumble, you know the rest of the story.
Right.
He's not with us today, and this was back. This is 10 years ago.
I'm interested, and I think you mentioned a really important dynamic, because what we see, Abby, where we work, is that these kids come in, and they might have, in
a sports
previous
injury.
Generation, they might have experimented with alcohol, smoked marijuana, tried some other substances. Nowadays, the prescription opiates are so accessible that these kids in high school, in so-called good neighborhoods and places like that, are going straight to prescription opiates.
And how many started because of a sports injury?
Because of a sports injury, car accident, like the.
But when you think about that, some of the sports industry, some of these young people get the drugs that they're getting. Do they need them?
They're way over prescribed.
Yeah.
Do they need them for their injury? I mean, let's be honest. And I think that's what happens. And young people kind of understand. They know anybody who's thinking about Oxycontin, oxycodone. My fear is that Oxycontin is a popular name out there. So if you're out there, a young person, you think, "Oh, I'll just take one for my injury. It's legit." And before you know it, you're hooked.
Right.
Maura Healey, can we hear about what you're doing, the task force you're putting together to combat this issue.
Yeah. Well, look, basically, in a nutshell, it's all hands on deck. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want all of the folks in the Attorney General's office, they may be healthcare lawyers, consumer protection advocates who are used to looking at big pharma, criminal investigators, our state troopers who are involved in looking at some of the high-end drug trafficking, those who focus on public education and outreach, who can work and support prevention initiatives. I want everybody in that office to know that this is my priority and it's my priority for the people of the state. And so it involves a lot of different components. It involves the outreach, the education to young people, to doctors. It involves working with our state agencies to build a more robust prescription drug monitoring program. It's going to involve possibly partnering with the legislature to work on a pharmacy lock-in program to get at some of the doctor shopping. And, you know, it's going to involve a look at, as I say, into sale and marketing practices of some of the drug companies who I invite to the table, as I invite folks from the Mass Medical Society to be part of the solution here. And certainly, you know, it involves collaboration and work with leaders like Mayor Walsh, who's led on this, who knows so much about treatment and recovery. We want to make sure that hospitals, insurance companies are also at the table solving this problem. If we don't deal with it now, we will continue to pay as a community, as a society, in very deep and lasting ways. And so, you know, that's why I am where I am on this issue, John. And we got a lot of work to do. But as the mayor says, I know he and I are both committed to it. The governor's committed to it. And that's what it's going to take, commitment from all comers on this.
Just a quick question. You know, we talk about Narcan, and for the people who are listening, Narcan is a heroin or opiate overdose reversal medication that's given out in a nasal dose that can actually save lives. We've seen many lives saved in it. And later in the show, we're going to have people coming on and talking about Narcan. But the price of Narcan went up almost 50%, it almost doubled in the last year. And I understand Narcan is manufactured here in Massachusetts. That seems, I don't want to say the word profiteering, but I just did. That seems, coincidental.
Well, it just shows you how successful the business is by the need for it and the demand for Narcan. I know Rita's coming off from the Boston Public Health Commission, I think next. I think she probably has some stats there. Of what you've City of Boston, the EMTs alone have used Narcan. I forget how many hundreds of times this year. That's hundreds of potential life saved.
Yes.
With the overdoses. And I think that, you know, the company I wasn't aware of it until just now, so I'll look into that tomorrow. But there's such a demand for Narcan. You know, in Boston, we have our fire department carries it, the EMS carries it, and we're also working with the police now to have the police carry it. So all of our first responders in Boston are going to carry Narcan. You have people that are addicted to heroin carrying Narcan. You have family members that have young people or people in their family addicted to heroin carrying Narcan. So it's just amazing. Narcan is a way to bring somebody back. It's not a way to solve a problem.
You
save somebody's life, but that's not the answer to the problem. And I think that's what we have to make sure we're very clear on as we move forward. This is about stopping drug use, and this is about preventing drug use from happening. And I think that a lot of the policies that Mara is going to be working on is going to help us with both prevention in the upfront and then also solutions in the long term.
Yeah. I mean, how many stories have we heard? You know, Narcan administered, and a week or two later, the same individual's dead.
What can we do to make sure this collaboration keeps going? I mean, what do you need from your constituents? Because it's really important that everybody's on the same page.
Well, you know, I believe everybody here needs to step up and be an advocate. This does require investment and meaningful investment. It requires dollars. It requires funding if we're going to do what needs doing, as the mayor says. And, you know, real access to treatment and services requires money, requires funding. And so I would tell people that they should advocate for that funding. Obviously, we're facing real tough budget scenario right now, and decisions need to be made. But, you know, I know I make this a priority because you see how it's playing out day in and day out in the lives of people here in the state. So be an advocate, be involved, support these initiatives, pay attention, get yourself educated, and, you know, encourage collaboration because that's what it's going to take. Collaboration between and among the mayor, mayors like Mayor Walsh, myself as Attorney General, the governor, heads of various agencies, and police. I mean, this kind of collaboration and partnership is what we need.
And I'll tell you, for me, as far as keeping the front burner, I don't need to be reminded. I know that within the next 30 days, there's a good chance that I'm going to know somebody who overdosed and dies, or somebody whose family member overdosed and dies. You know, it's I will hear it, and that's just another reminder for me to continue to move forward. And you know, again, working with the new Attorney General, I look forward to working with her. You know, when we had a meeting, the first meeting we had after she got elected, this was one of the first issues that we spoke about, and that's important. You know, to be able to continue that conversation.
I just want to thank both of you so much for taking time out on a Sunday and coming in and talking about this problem. It means the world to us, and we appreciate your efforts that you're doing. You're leading the country in this, and it's important to us in the field that you're doing the work you're doing. So, Attorney General-elect Maura Healey, thank you so much for coming in. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, thanks so much. We'd love to have you guys back and check in a little while, see how the efforts are going.
Well, absolutely. Thanks for having us, and we're all in this together.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Right Turn Radio. We'll be right back after a break. Tonight we're talking about the opiate epidemic in Massachusetts and New England and what we can do to stop it. As Mayor Walsh pointed out, Abby, huge, huge issue that you know, is needs action on kind of every level of the state and the local communities.
Well, and what we're going to be talking about is Narcan, and Narcan is the last ditch, the last chance that someone has. You know, we work on prevention, trying to prevent people from becoming addicted, from using drugs, from becoming addicted, from getting in trouble with it, and this is to prevent them from dying, and that's it. I mean, this is the last stand between addiction and death.
Yes, and that's really important to repeat that.
And we need to prevent, and they were talking about what we're going to do to prevent all that, but since that's not where we are right now, and we're just trying to keep young people from dying.
And we're in the middle of an epidemic, and I looked up the definition of an epidemic, and it's a widespread occurrence of a disease in a community at a particular time.
And that we got. They're both nodding, but we should introduce
tonight
them.
We have in the studio Rita Nieves, Bureau Director of Addictions for the Boston Public Health Commission, and Berto Sanchez, Overdose Prevention Manager for the Boston Public Health Commission. Welcome to Right Turn Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being with you tonight.
It's so funny because Rita and I worked on similar projects about, what, 3-4 years ago? More like 15 or 20 years ago. So
when you guys were like 10?
Yeah, when we were really young. Well, no, and we're both still in the addiction field, and it's because there's hope.
So, you know, for our listening public out there who might not know, what is an overdose and what does it, you know, how can people recognize when an overdose is happening?
And it's opiate overdose, right?
Opiate overdose, yeah, I'm sorry.
So the basic definition of an overdose, I think, is putting too much in your body for your system to handle. Once it becomes overloaded, it'll just shut down. And so it's more of learning what the harm or the high risk factors, what they are, and educating people what they are so that they can basically learn how to stay alive one day at a time.
So when we take drugs, whatever drugs they are, in this case opioids, that chemical sits in receptors in our brain. So in the context of an overdose, what's happening is the person has taken too much of a particular drug, and those receptors are taken, or I should say, you know, overwhelms the receptors. And in the case of the opioids, one of the consequences of that is that your nervous central system gets depressed and your respiration slows down to the point that it can stop.
Well, I mean, I was reading a novel, and in it, that the person's brain forgot to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's what happens.
Yes.
Or stop breathing. Exactly.
And it, the root of admission of opiates doesn't matter. Once it's in your system, the effects are going to be the same.
So you don't, it's not just, I mean, that's what Mayor Walsh was saying, that a lot of these recent overdoses were from people snorting.
Right, snorting, taking pain meds, smoking it.
Doesn't matter the route, yes.
Right, right.
Once it gets into your system, it'll end up in your brain. Right.
And there are some, I mean, I know there are medications, I mean, if you also take them with other medications, like if you're, so what are some, if somebody's doing two, like.
So benzodiazepines is a major.
So like Valium and Klonopin.
Valium, Klonopin, Xanax, Ativan, Librium, most common ones, the cheapest one out there. What happens is when you take those and mix them with opiates, it multiplies the effect 2 to 3 times. It also has different lifespans in the body. So benzos stay at least a minimum of 24 hours, whereas opiates, probably 4 to 6 hours max.
And somebody could actually inject an opiate and not overdose for half an hour. These things happen. What does it look like to the observer when somebody overdoses? What is the, do they stop breathing? Do they look like they're sleeping?
So like Rita mentioned, your respiratory system basically shuts down. But before it shuts down, it slows down. And so as less and less air goes in, it gets to a point where it won't pump oxygen to the extremities. And the extremities are your head, arms, and legs. And so at that point, you're going to see blue fingertips and blue lips, which is a real good indicator that person's not getting the necessary oxygen into their body. There's another thing that it sounds sort of like a snoring sound. Most people call it the death gurgle, and it's unique because it's like a snoring sound, but it's not. You hear them try to inhale, and then it's silent, and then it extends between each one longer and longer till the body just stops breathing. And at that point, the brain is sending the body a message to shut it down. And the body's unique. So what it's doing is grabbing any bit of oxygen it can before it goes completely unresponsive.
Oh, that is so, I mean, yeah, we have lost too many people, haven't we?
We have. And so you guys are training people in the use of Narcan. Who are you targeting?
Can we first talk about what happens with Narcan?
Okay.
Yeah, because right now we have somebody dead or almost dead.
Right.
So what happens? Tell me about Narcan. Tell me what happens, what it looks like, all that.
So Narcan is an opiate antagonist. So it only works on opiates or anything that's mixed with opiates. And basically, once you see someone that's unresponsive, one of the best ways to tell is grab your knuckles, rub them on their sternum or on the upper lip. If they don't respond to that pain, we have a medical problem.
Yeah.
At that point, our protocol is that you call 911 immediately because we do need that medical backup. Then
what if I'm holding opiate, illegal drugs myself? Wouldn't that be a bad thing to call 911?
Well, for some people, that might be, but the Good Samaritan Bill was revised in August of 2012. And so what it does is it provides limited immunity. Probably three things that would get someone arrested at the scene would be if they had warrants, if there was a weapon present, or if there was drugs on a large distribution scale.
Okay,
so you call 911 first, and then what do you do? If you've been trained in Narcan, what does Narcan do?
So Narcan, what it does is it removes the opiates off the receptors that Rita was mentioning earlier, and it kind of binds it. So it doesn't allow those opiates to connect again with that receptor. It doesn't neutralize the opiates that are in the body. All it does is pushes it away, and it stays within the body for 30 to 90 minutes. And that's based on a person's health, their weight, and their tolerance level. That's basically it. One of the things that we heavily promote before administering Narcan is the use of rescue breathing, because the body needs oxygen before it needs Narcan.
Okay.
Okay.
Are there any risks of using, or any dangers of using Narcan?
No, so that's the beauty of you know, our ability to use Narcan, that if for some reason somebody by mistake gives it to somebody who they think it's in the context of having an overdose, they're not going to harm them.
Right.
So if somebody just fainted and they thought it was an overdose and they gave them Narcan,
correct,
nothing
right.
happened.
No.
It only works if there's opiates in the body. You can't. It's non-addictive. You can't abuse it, and there's no side effects to it, even if someone's taking any other kind of medication.
So why isn't it given out like bubble gum? I'm sorry. That's for. That's
how did that slip out? But that's a good point. That's a good point.
Well, the good news is, you know, since 2006, we implemented the Narcan pilot in the city of Boston, and so that's what, almost 8 years ago,
right?
Almost nine, and more and more people have been able to be trained and have Narcan. I mean, I carry Narcan in my pocketbook because I know the state of things in the city. I mean, you could run into an overdose, you know, in any moment. So we've made tremendous progress in terms of training providers, training active users, training family and friends. And now, you know, law enforcement and the fire department have been trained and also are part of the people that are out there, the team that are able to respond as well.
So when we come back, we're going to take a look at a Narcan kit and have Berto Sanchez just show us over the radio how this actually works. It's life-saving. Like you said, Rita, it needs to be in the hands of as many people as possible. We're talking about the opiate epidemic. We're talking about the end of the line, actually, for people who are addicted to opiates, who overdose. We're talking about saving them. We're talking about Narcan, and Berto, can you just quickly kind of describe this little kit that you have here and what it looks like?
All right, so inside the kit, we have two boxes, well, actually two doses, which are in each separate box. We have a small plastic that has a filter for rescue breathing, so you know, as a sort of like a barrier when you're putting your mouth on somebody else, and then the basic information on how to put everything together. There's a small foam piece that's wrapped around the box with a rubber band. What that is the atomizer that converts the liquid Narcan into a mist, and a mist is basically small droplets of water that adhere better to your mucous membrane. Inside the box is a glass vial with the medication of Narcan and the applicator, plastic applicator. The glass vial has a red cap or purple. Either way, it's the same thing. Pull that cap off, and then on the applicator, there's two yellow plastic covers on each end. Pop those open, and what you do is use both open-ended sides and put them together. Twist it until you see a small drop come out of the medicine. Narcan, and then grab the atomizer, the foam piece, and twist that on firm and tight. Make sure it's on straight, and now you're ready to administer. What we highly recommend is half up one nostril, the rest up the other.
Just up the nose.
Up the nose, that's it.
And the applicator looks like those things you give baby medicine with, doses of antibiotics with. And it's a conical... It's a conical thing for the nasal thing. This used to be a shot, and now it's so much easier to use.
And
long does it work? How long does it takes to work?
Like 30 to 90 minutes.
Seconds.
Within 1 to 3 minutes.
1 to 3 minutes. So you're sitting there, you've called 911, you're doing rescue breathing, and you've done the Narcan.
So if you have encountered somebody who seems to be having an overdose, and it's beginning to turn blue, for example, because of the lack of oxygen. Once you administer Narcan, if it works, on the person works quickly, you should be able to see the signs of that change.
Like they start to really breathe.
The person, the color begins to come back on the person, and you know their skin begins to.
And
look
you hear
more
the
normal.
Ambulance coming off in the distance.
Right. How much does a dose cost? Not that I know you're helping distribute them for free, with the city. But how much does a dose cost now?
And how does one get them?
So they used to cost about $42, give and take, for the kit that we distribute. Unfortunately, that price went up towards the end of the last year in 2014, and now it went up from $42 to $78.
That's twice as much.
That's what our EMS department is it's
And so then
for.
If you have to get every single person in your, it starts to be a real expense.
Mm-hmm.
Twice
absolutely,
as much.
Absolutely. So we are, AHOPE site, it's part of one of the Narcan distribution sites that the State Department of Public Health funds. So the State Department of Public Health, the Bureau of Substance Abuse Services, they cover the cost of the Narcan right now. So they're the ones who pay for this cost. And then we work with them so we can distribute them to the people we train and enroll in Narcan.
I was just wondering how somebody like in one of the suburbs, if they don't live in Boston, how they might go about getting Narcan. Is it a prescription?
Well, there's 24 programs statewide that will provide training and Narcan. If they go on mass.gov website and look at the opiate prevention program, they can get further information there.
So there are a number of sites throughout the state where...
Who should have these doses of Narcan?
Initially, we started addressing people that were at high risk. Individuals coming out of prison are at 129% higher than the rest of the population of suffering from a fatal overdose if they have had a history of opiate use. We've individuals that are in shelters, individuals in early recovery because they are at a higher risk for relapsing. We were really focusing on the high risk populations now. We're just educating everybody.
Yeah, families, everybody.
Right, and anyone and everyone, because right now we're really trying to push away from that stigma that only people that use are the ones that need to be trained. This is everybody. The majority of the reversals that have happened or the rescues have been done peer-to-peer, parents with children, children with parents. So it really lets us know that the information is simple enough for people to retain, simple enough to share with someone else, and simple enough to put to use when situation calls for it.
We had a radio show and we had somebody on who said, well, doesn't that just encourage people to be heroin addicts? Because they now know they might not die.
Well, the thing is, the person that is active using is 100% reliant on everyone around him to be able to respond to that emergency if they overdose. So we have to make sure that our information is current and updated as possible so that if anyone needs to respond, they know exactly what to do and do it thoroughly.
And, you know, our job is to meet people where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have multiple treatment options for people out there, depending on, you know, of the level of care they need. But we also work with people who are active users. And they tend to be people who are completely disconnected from the healthcare system, family, friends sometimes. And through our AHOPE program, we're able to connect with the most at-risk individuals. So, we're trying to do is give those people a chance to live and to recovery because, you know, like we say in our field, only people who are alive can recover. If you're dead, you cannot recover, right?
It's over.
And, you know, I will also say that, you know, if you never talk to a police officer, a parent, a friend, you know, or a family member who've encountered a loved one in a bathroom, in a home, dying because they don't know how long they've been on the floor, you know, having used drugs. And you know, if you've never heard, you know, the difference it's made for them to have this tool that they can administer right there, right then, while 911 gets called and, you know, professionals come in to help. You know, you've never heard, you know, the difference that this could make in somebody's life.
Was there a website that we want to mention, you guys?
Yeah. And we will post it
And we will post it on our website.
So you can go to bphc.org.
Boston Public Health Commission.
Boston Public Health Commission.org. You can also called if you want training on overdose prevention training and how to know how to find Narcan, 617-534-3968.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, Rita Nieves, Humberto Sanchez from the Boston Public Health Commission. Great show, Abby. I learned some stuff
today.
Well,
I did too.
And that's good for us. BPHC coordinates a number of community trainings for Narcan, and check out their website. You've been listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Check us out at right-turn.org. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean. Remember, be safe and ask for help.